This is Mr. David Lamb, and it's Reel One. Could I ask you, first of all, Mr. Lamb, about your family? How long had your family been living in Hong Kong?
I am the third generation.
Were you a big family?
No, I have two other brothers. So there's three boys in the family, no girls.
What did your father do?
He was a marine architect, naval architect, but at that time before the war, there's not much work to do, because they only built the ferries.
I expect Hong Kong was quite a busy place with the British Navy then, was it? With the Royal Navy, before the war?
Not quite. There's always only one or two ships in port.
I suppose the early 30s would have been.
Yeah, maybe.
Yes, maybe a busier time. Yeah, yes. Yeah. What was life like, though, for someone growing up in a Hong Kong in the 1930s?
Most poor people. Not rich at all. Only a few rich people.
Not like today. Lots of rich people today.
Yes.
So was life quite hard for Chinese people?
Yeah. It was quite hard. I mean, most people, if the, what we call the coolies, the laborers, they only earn about $3 in a month. My father was only earning about $60-$70 a month. It's considered middle class.
How about your education, Mr. Lamb? Where did you go to school?
Over in Kowloon Sai, the school is Ying Hwa College, YINGWA, Ying Hwa College. It's a missionary school.
Were the missionaries quite strong then in Hong Kong? Were there many missionaries here?
Yes, always.
When did you leave school? Would you have left school before the war started?
I was still a student.
Were you? At college?
I joined volunteer when I was a student.
So where were you a student? At this same Ling Hwa College?
Yeah.
What were you studying?
General
student.
Secondary school.
So
I wasn't graduated.
So, what age were you then when you joined the volunteers?
17.
Why did you join?
China was already at war with Japan. And we have a feeling that the Japanese would sooner or later come down. And then, first of all, is for fun. Because we can play with machine guns and so forth. And secondly, we have to protect our own family and people and property in Hong Kong.
So it got more serious as the time went on, did it?
Yes.
What were the defences of Hong Kong like, before the war started?
Not quite strong, because Europe was already at war. Britain was at war in Europe, and so they don't send many troops to Hong Kong or the naval ships. In fact, most of the navy was drawn to go back to Europe.
And how about the Air Force? Did you have many planes here?
I think the commander of the RAF here was only a squadron leader. We had a very small outfit here. I think we have only about one plane, two planes, recognition.
And was there much in the sort of defences built? Did you have pillboxes and trenches dug?
Mostly trenches. The pillboxes were they started building them in about 1940 only. 1940-41, so it was only 2 years, almost 2 years' time.
Were they good pillboxes, you know, well resourced?
Not much use. Without navy and air support, you know, we were lucky to hold the place for so many days, 18 days.
How about the army, the regular army? Was that well represented? You know, did you feel confident that you had enough army?
Well, just about 2 months before the outbreak of war in Hong Kong, Canada sent 2,000 soldiers here, and they were new recruits. Just finished drilling only. So, in fact, the defense strength is very weak.
As the time went on, did you find that you were doing more training, more realistic training in the volunteers?
Yes. I mean, in 1941, that is the year the war started in December. So the whole year, funny, we were feeling a bit funny. We practiced a lot of retreating. That is most strenuous too, because although we were in the light machine gun company, but we only used Lowe's gun, which is 48 pounds. You dash for over a mile before you can stop. While in assault, attacking, you take about 200 yards, you lay down, and then the other flank goes up, then the middle flank, and then you have a plenty of rest.
So you were in number 4 company, were you?
Yes,
yes. And you were infantry, were you?
Infantry, yes.
Yes, but
we
you had
light machine gun company.
Later they called it that, did they? Number 4 machine gun company.
Yes, yes.
But you considered yourself infantry, of course.
Yes,
you were part of the infantry. Yes, yes. You about that weekend,
yes.
You know, before the Japanese attacked.
We used to have 2 weeks training camp this year, and that year we started on the 1st of December out in Fan Ling, which is close to the border. And it was only one week. Then on a Saturday night, that would be about the 6th of December. Just during dinner time, we have hush-hush order to pack up immediately after dinner and quietly walk out to the railway station, but don't walk on the main road because the boots cause too much noise. To walk on the side, you know, where the earth and so on. And you were told to go home, report to headquarters Monday morning at 8 a.m. But by 8 a.m. Monday morning, the Japanese started to bomb Hong Kong already.
Do you remember that?
Yes. Report to headquarters.
Was that heavy bombing very heavy? When the Japanese bombed,
was it very heavy?
Only
small bombs, they bombed the airport. Destroyed the only two planes. Yeah. See, during normal training, our platoon, number 13 platoon, was to defend Mount Davis Battery. And we dug trenches and so on. We used to know the place already. So for over a year, training to defend the battery. And even if what signed in there, Mount Davis, 9.2 times on top of Mount Davis. But then, when we reported to headquarters at DG on Monday, they were shipped up to the peak, not going to be her usual descending phase of a dune. The other, number 14 was in Cape Collins, and 15 was to protect Lyman battery in 91. Only our platoon went up to the peak, and my section was posted just outside Matilda Hospital in the peak. Because down there, in Poplum, there's a small battery, I think it was only 4 inches wide. But we still have to protect it, you know. And about the third day, the Japanese bomber come and bomb. They were so close, and I couldn't resist. I opened fire on them with a machine gun, but of course we haven't got armor-piercing bullet. So just knock on the side, it's a very knock down, it's circle back and bomb. One officer belonged to the battery down below, but got all injured in the front. Carry out, Matilda Hospital is closed, you know, it's all right. So immediately he has treatment. Then he remained there, and every day, you know, the same three planes go around, come around again. Yeah. Until the Japanese landed on the 18th. Now, for 4 days, Kowloon already fallen. After 4 days, when the Japanese tried to cross the harbor, they tried several times, failed, but on the 18th of December, they succeeded. And they drove all the way up from North Point, Happy Valley, Kupu Road, up Wong Lai Chong Gap. Then we were ordered to move down to Magazine Gap, which is quite close to Wong Lai Chong Gap. And I think it was only 2 days. Then we were ordered to reinforce number 3 company, who was fighting in Wong Lai Chong Gap. They were all, overwhelmed by the enemy. By the time we reached there, enemy has already gone through, so we didn't encounter enemy at all. Then we were told to move down to a place called Black Hill, which is now Wong Chapang, now Wong Chapang, where the police training school is.
What was it called then?
Black Hill.
Beck.
Beck.
B?
B. I think B-L-A-K-E or B-R-I-C-K-L.
Beck Hill, right.
A lot of gunmen go down there. So we were all there to protect from looting. You see, the local people, they know that the Japanese are coming to a lot of looting going on. Some for food, you know, you can't bring them. And then we move at night. We arrived there, it was all quiet. And then we got orders to move back up to the peak. And it took the whole night to go back up. Yeah.
It's a very steep hill, that, isn't it? And that's, did you have to keep off the roads, or were you allowed to go on the road?
Yeah, it was only climbing the hill, not on the main road. Finally, we get on to the main road near Poplum Reservoir, and then we still keep on the road and went up the station in number 10. This house belonged to a fellow working for Jardine Medicine. That was just on the main road going up to the peak. So we were to guard that road from Japanese, you know, moving further up to the peak. The headquarters, command headquarters, was up at the peak, in Peak Mansion. So we had to block that road from Japanese advancement.
What did you have in order to block the road? What sort of weaponry did you have?
Well, we still, you know, infantry, you know, just those guns.
No artillery at all to back up?
No. In fact, two of our men died. Only a short period. Yeah. On the 24th, one died, and one on the 25th in the morning. In the afternoon, Hong Kong surrender. So if Hong Kong surrender early, it wouldn't have been.
Was that, you know, did the Japanese actually come up your road?
No, they didn't. But then you see, in the afternoon of the 25th, Hong Kong surrender. We were told surrender, destroy all the arms and so on, and just wait for order. Then the Japanese come around and collected us.
Did you actually engage the Japanese, though, you know, during all this time?
No direct encounter. I mean, all the time, we arrived a bit late or something.
How about your two friends? How were they killed? The two people in your company?
Well, I didn't quite know. So it was, I think, just on the way up or just arrived. We have to send sentry down the road, you know, a few hundred yards below where we were. And the other one who died in the morning of 25th, well, he was walking down to relieve the sentry. And got direct hit from a shell. So the Japanese were quite close, in fact they can see him walking down.
Did you, when you went up to the gap, you know, Wong Nai Chung gap, where, as you say, there had been fierce fighting, were there dead bodies or wounded people about then?
Oh, yes, they were all around.
Were they?
A battlefield. Most fierce fighting in Hong Kong, Wong Nai Chung gap.
Yes.
As far as volunteers are concerned, those places were manned by volunteers.
So you saw what war was there, did you?
Yeah. The Japanese just overwhelmed. just run over the place. So in fact, we moved at night. By dawn, we arrived there. Fighting was already over. I mean, there was not much of a battle ground. We don't have fortresses there. Only a few trenches were dug. And dead bodies all around on the hillside. That's all.
Were they the volunteers, yeah, or were there Japanese as well?
No, they were still Japanese. I think they don't suffer heavy casualties. They know our position.
I suppose the planes, the aeroplane,
yes,
would have given them a great advantage,
yes,
wouldn't
yes.
it? Yes.
I mean, when we were in Magazine Gap, every evening, I think they must be very close to us. And they see us get around to a dinner, then they start to sell us. Can't even have a comfort for dinner. You know, they keep bombarding us. And we very quickly learn the lesson. So once they sell us, then the whole just gets into their home. Then they keep, you know, selling. So you get into the hole where they have shells and then eat there.
Were you surprised at the speed of the Japanese advance?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they move quite fast. Very fast.
And were they good soldiers?
Oh, yeah. They were well trained.
So, would your first encounter with them have been when you surrendered?
Yeah.
Would that be the first time you met the Japanese?
Yeah.
How did they treat you then when you surrendered?
Well, by then it was all right. See, if you get captured at the battlefield, we heard after entering the camp from those people who had been in the field, they just line you up, walk around. If they don't like you, they hit you with the sword, just take off your helmet and use the back of the sword, hit you. It's still deep, even though the sharp edge, it's still deep. And suddenly they just poke your bayonet. They just do it for pleasure. They thought it was fun. Yeah. So I was lucky because I didn't encounter them in the battle.
And they treated you properly, did they?
Oh, yeah. Yes. By the time it was all right. And even at the beginning, prison of war camp, they still treat us quite good. Of course, they just go to the cold storage, get the beef and so on to supply us with food. Mm-hmm. Not a lot, but we still have meat and rice and vegetables. Mm-hmm. But after a few months, I think the cold down or the storage is all exhausted. Everything is enough, then we start to suffer.
So, could I go back to the surrender, when you came down from the peak, from your position, you know, stopping them going up the peak,
yeah.
And where did you go, where were you assembled?
Well, we just stayed in, that house is number 10, I can't remember what the name of the room, yeah. And then they come and collect us. Not the Japanese themselves, it's the British army collected us, took us down to Kennedy Row, where there were nine quarters there, and a Navy canteen. We stayed there until the 1st of January 1942. For 6-7 days.
What sort of conditions were they when you stayed there? Did you have food and water?
It was very quarter and the Mafi canteen. There was plenty of clean stuff, food and cigarettes. People know that we have to go. People start taking stocks. The food, other people take potatoes, tin potatoes, corned beef and so on. But my quartermaster sergeant, he was in the First World War, so he knew. He said, son, don't take those heavy stuff. Take as many cigarettes as you can, because they're light. And by the time, when cigarettes become short, well, one cigarette again, and one tin of corned beef.
When you went to the camp, you know, which camp were you sent to?
First in the Samsepo camp. That was on the 1st of January. The Japanese then marched us down, guarding on into the Star Ferry. Got us all in the ferry, several ferries, no? And then we marched the whole way up Nagan Road to Samsepo. People carrying heavy stuff, just throw it all over the roadside.
Were there people watching you as you marched?
Oh, yeah. Civilians. Some were nasty. They think, well, now, it's Asia. the Japanese propaganda in Greater Asia.
So did they shout at you? No, were they?
No, they just saw us and said, traitors, call us traitors. Looking for the British, fighting for the British.
And these would have been the ordinary Hong Kong residents,
yes,
would they?
Yes. I mean, those not well off, not well educated people. Maybe well educated people, they would keep themselves inside the house.
Was there much in the way of collaboration, helping the Japanese before they came? You know, were they getting information from within Hong Kong?
Big colonies in Hong Kong as well. Yeah. And then when the plane comes in the night time, you can see it sitting up, some fireworks sitting up to show the target.
When you arrived at the camp, what sort of condition was it in?
We just use our brown sheet, put it, lay it on the floor and sleep there with a blanket and a great coat. That's all. You can't carry too many things.
And did you find that all the different sort of nationalities kept together? Were the Chinese all together? And the Portuguese?
Yes. Portuguese. And, it doesn't matter. Only, I think for 3 days, the Japanese start to sort us out. There were only 40 Chinese. So they kept us in a concentrated camp within the camp. Because they think if we walk out, we escape, we mix in the crowd, they can't catch us. So they use barbed wire and surround one hut, only 40 of us. Yeah. Two of them were in fact St. John's ambulance. We get 38 volunteers.
Did St. John's ambulance, did they play a big role in the medical services of the island?
Yes. I mean, during the war, they did serve as field ambulance, to save the wounded and so on.
And they were treated like prisoners of war, were they?
It's like that. In fact, it was the same.
So what was life like for you in the camp, Mr. Lam? You know, were you made to work?
Yes, but not at the beginning. Later, they sent us out to Kai Tak Airport to build the new airport. I mean, new at that time, not the present one. but then, on the 18th of April, 1942, I was transferred to Argyle Street Camp together with all the officers.
You were transferred?
Yes.
Yes, to what camp was that?
Argyle Street.
Argyle Street?
Yes, Argyle Street camp.
Why was that?
Just where the Eye Hospital stands now. That was first built for the concentration of Chinese troops when they were pushed over by Japanese fighting in Canton, Guangzhou, where this town Shenzhen. They got pushed down and then British disarmed them and then built the camp to put them there. But before the Hong Kong surrender, they let them go. And Japanese used it to house us.
So who would have been in the Argyle Street camp then? What would the population have been?
600 altogether. 600.
And
all
were
officers.
All are officers?
All officers.
Were you an officer in
no.
the?
Yes. I went there as a batman. My officers took me there as a batman.
And
so I didn't have to work.
Well, who was your officer?
Oh, Keith Valentine was the company commander at that time. Formerly it was Major Benson, but then he left the company before the war. Keith Valentine. He was the managing director of Thornton Company.
So was that better to be in Argyle Street? Was it a better camp?
We have wooden huts. of course you just get a few pans and a few bricks to just make a small bed instead of just lying on the floor.